This is just a bad look all around for Netflix. So to Mr. Seinfeld, I'm going to very humbly say, sir, maybe it's not a movie's problem. Maybe, just maybe, you should make sure that the people that you accept bags of money from are going to treat your products the way you'd like them to be treated. It's not only a Jerry Seinfeld issue. I think it's for any filmmaker out there. You want relevance. You want cultural currency. You get your choice of companies to work for, or you can take the bag. You want to take the bag? Don't complain. This is the Box Office Podcast. I'm Daniel Luria, the editorial director of Box Office Pro, the pulse of theatrical exhibition. Here once again with my colleague and co-host, Rebecca Pauly, deputy editor of Box Office Pro. From the Box Office Networks, we have Romeo Duchesne. And from the Box Office Studios, we have Russ Fisher. And in today's episode, we are going to be going over all of the latest release date changes on the calendar. We've got a couple of moves here to go over. And after that, Romeo is going to be taking the stage to share with us the Box Office Pro forecast for this coming weekend, because we've got two new releases to challenge Zendaya's Challengers in its week two. And following that, Russ Fisher is going to be taking reins of the podcast here in guiding us through the May preview. All the movies coming out in the month of May, as you know, the Box Office Studios does a lot of custom editorial content for movie fans on behalf of movie theaters. That's a really cool division of our company that Russ Fisher heads. So he will be talking to us about everything coming up on the schedule for the rest of the month. I'm excited, guys, because May is basically the unofficial kickoff, the summer movie season. It also means that my infant daughter will be moving daycare classrooms at the end of the month. And Russ, I know as a young parent yourself, you've been through the first 6 months of daycare when it seems like it's apocalypse now. And the deeper you get into that calendar, the new stomach virus comes in, you know, the different flus show up. I'm in the middle of it, man. I've been knocked out for 4 days.
Oh, yeah, man. You got 2 years of being in for it. And you're just going to have the most disgusting feelings in your body as your child brings stuff home. Have you had RSV yet? If you haven't.
I did. And a shout out to our colleagues at the Dine-In Cinema Summit, Matt and Amy Motter. True story. I got it while visiting my family in Austin over the holidays. I took one work meeting with Matt and Amy Motter over at their offices to speak about the Dine-In Cinema Summit. I showed up with what I thought was a cold. Oof. By the time I left, everybody had RSV, including the matters. I actually saw Amy at CinemaCon, and I said, "Hey, Amy, we haven't talked since I saw you in Austin. Did you?"
And
get
she
sick?
Holds up she holds up like a glass plate between the two of you, like you're not yeah, doing right. this to me.
Basically, I asked her, like, "Hey, by any chance, did you get sick after I saw you?" And she was like, "Yeah, you have no idea. I had the worst fever. It was RSV, Amy. My bad." And that was actually, I had that conversation like a day after I told Serena Gill I gave her entire executive team COVID at Cine Europe 2022. So every convention, I just get to tell people all the illnesses I give them. And that's a good positive spin to talk about everything coming to theaters in a little bit. But before we do, guys, I don't know if you saw the headlines. The alarm is out. Comedian Jerry Seinfeld doesn't think movies are relevant anymore. And I don't know, should we be scared about our jobs here on his opinion? He's saying they're no longer cultural touch points. They're no longer relevant. My question is, I don't know if he heard about Barbie or Oppenheimer from last year. I think they ended up being cultural touch points. They ended up being relevant. So Jerry Seinfeld has a new movie coming out on Netflix. And about a week before his new movie comes out on Netflix, he starts doing the media rounds on something he said in an interview, complaining about, you know, lack of relevance of movies these days. I wonder if that's a movie's fault or if that's a I sold my movie to Netflix and they're not promoting it fault.
Is this the one that's kind of like spoof sort of take on the movie about how they made Air Jordans, the movie about how they made the BlackBerry? It's like one of those origin stories, but fake.
You know what? I have no idea because I've heard nothing about this movie. And I have to actually ask that to you guys here on the panel.
If that is the movie, then maybe that's why no one's really biting us aside from Netflix burying things. It's a retread of a retread of a retread. Maybe nobody wanted to see it.
Well, I don't know how hard Netflix is working on this. So I'll start before we get into everything to talk about this week. I'll start with a very simple question. We'll start with Russ. All right. Did you know this movie from Jerry Seinfeld existed? Question one. Question two, do you even know what it's called? Question three, do you know when this Pop-Tarts movie from Jerry Seinfeld comes out? And the fourth one, before a minute ago, did you know it was going to be on Netflix?
I did know it existed. I know that I had read the title at some point, but if you had put a gun to my head 5 minutes ago and said, you know, tell me the title, there's no way I could have told you what that movie is called, nor when it comes out, nor that it is coming on Netflix. Honestly, I don't know when anything comes on a Netflix. I don't have Netflix anymore because I just found myself not watching it ever, even for stuff I like. And I got to say, look, I've talked on this podcast before about when I was young, I was very judgmental about movies and I would be like, that looks stupid. I'm not going to see that. And then years later, I'd realize I was the stupid one because I was missing something really good. But you know what? That continues into my adulthood. And I'm not just talking about this movie. I'm talking about I don't need the Blackberry movie. I don't need the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie. I haven't seen Air. I probably will, but honestly, I don't care. I don't need any of these product origin story movies.
Remind me, your job is to know what movies come out. Your job is to know what movies are titled. And you know, your job is to tell people where they can watch movies. You got 1 out of 4 on this one.
Well,
major company, major comedian, 1 out of 4.
In my defense, I work for movie theaters, not for streaming services. If there was any sense that this movie was going to get a theatrical release, I would have it on my calendar somewhere, maybe in like the 8th tab, but I would have it in a spreadsheet. And also, hey, look, Jerry Seinfeld, not known for movies. Sorry, Jerry, but that's not what we associate.
Apologize to Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
No, apologize to him.
How about you, Romeo? Romeo, first, I have to ask, you're coming from France. Do you know what a Pop-Tart is? Is this offensive to even ask you about the American pâtisserie delicacy known as a Pop-Tart?
I'm sorry.
I really like the accent.
That's how you pronounce it in Michigan. I don't know if you guys know that. I lived in Battle Creek 2 years. I know about Pop-Tarts.
What is a Pop-Tart?
I'm sorry.
It sounds like Pom-Tart, apple pie, which is tart au pomme, but I'm sure it's not that.
It's a bastardized toaster strudel.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't even know what a Pop-Tart is, Romeo. That's not even going to help us. So did you know this movie existed? Yes or no?
No, not at all. And you know what? I just check on Google and I think I'll join the most Google search around Jerry Seinfeld, which is, what is Jerry Seinfeld doing now?
Okay. Well, there you go, Netflix marketing campaign. You got 1 for 4 on Russ, 0 for 4 on Romeo. Rebecca, you got to make this a little bit better with our friends over at Netflix who bought this movie or finance it. Honestly, who even knows these days? In their content trough that they have. Do you know this movie existed? Do you know what it's titled? Do you know when it comes out? Or did you know it was on Netflix?
Last to know, I did know about the movie and the title just kind of floated into my head as we were recording this. It is called Unfrosted with Melissa McCarthy. I had no plans to see it. Still really have no plans to see it, just in the I saw the film announcement when a trailer came out or whatever that was, but I did not watch the trailer. So
all right, so 2 for 4. I will tell you, I did know it existed. I had no idea what it was called. I thought it already came out in the show notes before we started recording. I thought it came out weeks ago. And I did notice on Netflix.
This is the problem that we're having with other people not knowing and theatrically released movies coming out in terms of title awareness. But with us, it's just the Netflix ones.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a bad look all around for Netflix. So to Mr. Seinfeld, I'm going to very humbly say, sir, maybe it's not a movie's problem. Maybe, just maybe, you should make sure that the people that you accept bags of money from are going to treat your products the way you'd like them to be treated. It's not only a Jerry Seinfeld issue. I think it's for any filmmaker out there.
Yeah.
You want relevance. You want cultural currency. You get your choice of companies to work for, or you can take the bag. You want to take the bag? Don't complain. Well, good luck to Mr. Seinfeld and his movie that none of us can name name that none of us really know too much about. Best of luck with your direct-to-streaming release. Now let's talk about real movies going out to real theaters that audiences will actually be paying money to sit through, not to fold clothes during. Let's start with the Lord of the Rings trilogy extended editions, because Rebecca, Fathom is putting this out on a re-release in June.
Oh yeah, Fathom releasing the Lord of the Rings trilogy extended editions on June 8th, 9th, and 10th. I think that is a much better strategy than what Disney is doing for May the 4th on Star Wars Day of a marathon of all the movies, because watching Fellowship, Towers, and Return of the King back to back to back would just be a long time. I mean, they make real comfortable seats nowadays, but I don't know if I could do the extended editions all in one go, but you can spread it out over the course of 3 days.
Yeah, I think it's a good call to have these three films back in theaters and in their extended editions too. If you guys remember during the home video release, when these came out in DVD, these extended editions were really one of the peaks in the DVD marketplace on a consumer level, where the assembly cuts or the director cuts went from being a niche product to something that I think the general consumers would look out for. Now, Russ, these movies were a cultural touch point for you when you were working professionally, in the sense that I think both Rebecca and I, and even Romeo, we were still in school when these movies came out. What was the impact of these movies, and how do you sort of gauge their impact now coming out in a re-release?
Yeah, these movies were huge. I mean, they did a lot of things. Obviously, they made stars of some of the cast. They made a star of Peter Jackson. They convinced people that movies like this could work. Nobody thought they could work. They were absolutely, as you say, high points of the home video marketplace. I mean, these extended editions were made to look like books. They were really fancy. They look good on a shelf. You know, it's the sort of thing that you would never see come out of a major studio now for a home video release. And they're still, I mean, these movies are still relevant. They still have a huge fandom. People are discovering them for the first time now, younger audiences. This is the second time this year they've been re-released in theaters. They put the theatrical editions of these movies back in theaters back in January. It was like a ring in the new year thing. I don't know how well promoted it was, but they were out there.
I do recall. And there's another Lord of the Rings movie coming up, granted an animated one. So, I mean, it's a, I guess it's a good tactic to kind of build that name recognition up after the Hobbit series kind of.
Not just animated, but an anime movie. Like, it's an anime house that's doing the work on War of the Rohirrim. That movie Rebecca's talking about, that is a December release from Warner Brothers. So everybody will know about that movie 3 months from now, certainly.
Well, it's, I think, a good idea. We always talk about this, right? You have an opportunity to revive an IP. Don't discount theatrical re-releases, especially on premium large format where you can sneak them in. I think this is a really good call from Fathom coming out in early to mid-June. But let's look further down the schedule, because we've got musical chairs of release dates here. Rebecca, you mentioned an anime, Lord of the Rings, coming out at the end of the year. In September, we have a computer animated Transformers title, Transformers 1, that is moving dates slightly.
Yeah, just a little bit. It was, we saw a good chunk of it at CinemaCon. It is a big part of Paramount's ongoing commitment to revitalizing the animated segments of their business. Transformers 1 moving from the 13th of September to the 20th of September. So not a huge release date there, but there's always that domino effect where once one thing moves, other studios start shifting things around as well. So.
Yeah, we have Universal's The Wild Robot that was originally slated to come out on September 20th. That gets bumped back to September 27th. And then hopping back over to June, we had another slight shift in release dates. The Watchers, the horror thriller that was originally going to come out on June 14th, now going back to June 7th. That leads us over to Sony. Rebecca, big changes here from Culver City. Let's start with Kraven the Hunter.
Kraven the Hunter. Anyone remember Kraven the Hunter?
That's still coming
out? Show of hands.
Sadly, I do remember Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. We've been hearing about Kraven the Hunter coming soon for 2-3 years now.
And we're going to be hearing it a little bit longer, because it used to be coming out on August 30th. It has been pushed back to the holiday season, December 13th, which I think definitely feels like a bold move from Sony. Definitely not sure if it's going to pay off. I mean, it's not like it's the only R-rated superhero movie coming out this year. Like, normally, if it were the only one, it might have that sort of novelty factor among the superhero, you know, fan communities. But, I mean, I'm not really tapped into the secondary, tertiary spider villains online fan clubs or whatever, but does anyone care about this movie?
I think Kraven the Hunter is one of the major Spider-Man villains, but the issue here, rather than the character itself, is going to be, I think, as you mentioned, the third R-rated superhero movie of the year and the least anticipated, we have to say, coming out in December. I don't know if fatigue is going to play a factor. Romeo, are you at all excited about this movie?
I don't know. And you know what? I think I was like thinking back when I was working at Sony Pictures, so more than 6 years ago now. I do remember that movie being already in the lineup and being pushed up again and again and again.
Jeez.
And last time I heard about it was like maybe 2 CinemaCons ago.
Yeah, I think it might have been Cine Europe 2022 when I last saw footage from it. Russ, I mean, you've been tracking superhero films for a long time. Kraven, maybe it's not the Green Goblin, but it's not an unheard of villain. They have a very popular story arc with Spider-Man involving Kraven the Hunter, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the very best Spider-Man stories in comics is a Kraven story. It's called Kraven's Last Hunt. It's from the mid-late 80s. It's terrific. It is, you know, you poll any bunch of fans about the best Spider-Man stories, and Kraven's Last Hunt is going to be in the top five. The problem with this movie is that's not the story in this movie. Spider-Man is not in this movie because it's one of Sony's movies based on Spider-Man characters that don't have Spider-Man.
I mean, they're putting so much attention, or at least in the trade show, so much attention on, oh my gosh, this is an R-rated superhero movie. Like, that's not novel anymore.
No, not by the time December comes around. There's been two that already came out. What's this third one going to add to the narrative? These changes seem to be less about Kraven the Hunter and more about Karate Kid, the new sequel / spinoff / multiverse. I don't even know what to call these things. Let's call it a class reunion of the Karate Kid universe. That was supposed to come out on December 13th. This movie can really perform anywhere if it is able to successfully build on the popularity of the Cobra Kai streaming series. We might be seeing something very impressive in the marketplace. Now, we do have to mention that the new season and the final season of Cobra Kai was delayed due to the actor's strike and the writer's strike. So that got pushed back. They decide to also push back Karate Kid from mid-December. Now it is coming out in late May 2025. So the new streaming series will be able to lead into this new movie. Late May, you'll have a lot of folks out of school by that point. I think Sony feels good about this schedule change, but it does impact, I think, our Q4 forecast, knowing that this opening weekend is no longer there, and you go from Sony releasing a family-friendly movie with a lot of momentum riding on it to a consistently delayed R-rated superhero movie. I think that does impact our Q4 forecast slightly. Let's look at some new titles that were also announced by Sony, Rebecca. We've got something from the Blumhouse side called They Listen coming out on August 30th.
Yeah, and this one, I gotta tell you, it tripped me up a little bit because there is another film coming up called They Follow, which is a sequel to David Robert Mitchell's It Follows. This is a completely different movie, also horror. Seems a bit confusing there, but yes, well, it is.
They Follow has not even been filmed yet. That has been announced, but we don't have anything on that. They Listen has been on the shelf for a year and a half. You know, it's Daniel, you will get to this point as a parent, or maybe you won't. I highly recommend this approach. Every once in a while when I see like Lego sets or something on sale or stuff I know my kid likes, I buy a couple. I throw them in a box in the basement. And then like if a moment comes up where I need a thing, it's like, oh, I just have to, we don't have to run to Target. I just like pull something out. Or if it's Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and we're supposed to be at his friend's birthday party at 10:30, I'm like, shit, we don't have a gift. What are we doing? I'm like, okay, I got this covered. I'm going to bounce into the basement, pull something out, throw it in a gift bag. We're good to go. That's what this movie feels like. That's what,
Russell, that's what horror feels like for the entire film industry right now.
Yeah.
You have a couple, 2-3 ones in the basement.
Yep.
Whether it's Blumhouse or not, roll it out when you got to fill up the schedule.
Exactly. At first, I was like, oh, Sony just had a mystery Blumhouse movie in the bag somewhere. It's like, oh, no, this one, I think this was originally set for release in August, like late last summer. It was originally on the calendar, and then they bumped it. So that's where we're at with They Listen, adjust your plans accordingly.
Fair enough. And then looking at the success of something like Sausage Party from Sony a couple of years back, we've got another animated R-rated movie. This time we've got Ryan Reynolds involved here. Animal Friends is coming out August 15th. And then we've got one final new title announcement to add on the schedule, Rebecca. This one, another extension of a Netflix animated series.
Yeah, there is a Netflix series created from DreamWorks Animation called Gabby's Dollhouse. I got to be honest, I know nothing about this property other than it is getting a movie called Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie, out 2025, kind of late end of September, September 25th. I think we can always use more big budget children's entertainment on the schedule, or big scope rather. And yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see between this and Karate Kid, both coming out in 2025, having that kind of streaming to theatrical mm-hmm. pipeline.
Well, I see Gabby's Dollhouse more as a Paw Patrol comp, right? Get a date that isn't traditionally looked at as a big family weekend, in this case, late September, get something that has some momentum behind it on the streaming side, and make the best out of it. So that is coming out in 2025. Now, after the break, let's go to the Box Office Pro Forecast with Romeo Duchesne. And we're back here on the Box Office Podcast with this weekend's Box Office Pro Weekend Forecast. Romeo, we've got two new releases and one holdover that we expect to hit in our box office podium. Top three movies on the marketplace. Let's start with number one. We spoke about this last week. It was tracking downwards last time we checked in with you based on the engagement of the latest trailer. Where are we with The Fall Guy on its opening weekend?
Well, The Fall Guy opened internationally, especially in Australia. Australia is the biggest market right now for The Fall Guy. It opened number one with $2.9 million. It's above Bullet Train that opened at 2.2. Let's remember that Once Upon a Time opened at the time at $4.5 million. And Once Upon a Time opened in the US a little bit above $14 million. And Bullet Train opened, I think, around like $30 million. I'm sure also Universal is quoting The Lost City as one of its comparable, open at $30 million in the US. But yeah, right now it opened also in Spain. Spain is the second market, well above Bullet Train and Mad Max. And in terms of international trailer tracking, it's getting a little bit better. Yeah, Fall Guy is catching Bullet Train a little bit. But I have to be honest, regarding age demographic, women are still 6 points lower than Bullet Train, and more than 8 points lower than Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a concern. And we've been tracking pre-sales here as well with our box office forecasting council, including colleagues from the industry on the exhibition and premium large format side. They had expressed to me that the pre-sales were lower coming into release week, but they seemed to pick up as early as Sunday night, heading into the Friday. Right now, we have an opening weekend forecast of between 30 to 40 million for The Fall Guy. Romeo just mentioned it a second ago, the comp here being on the lower end, Bullet Train, which opened to $30 million not that long ago. We will have the final weekend forecast on our website by the time you get this podcast, actually. So don't forget to check out boxofficepro.com. to see our final weekend preview story with our updated forecasting on The Fall Guy. And now on number two, it's going to be a close finish between Taro, a horror film, and a holdover here, Challengers. But let's start with Taro because we've got a slightly better opening weekend forecaster here, between $7 and $10 million. Romeo, what can you tell us about this title that has really not been getting a lot of marketing love?
No, I have to be honest, I have this feeling this movie is being coming out 10 years later because it reminds me of Ouija at the time. I don't know, it was released in 2014.
Yeah, you could really confuse one for the other here. It's really hard to tell the difference, and the lack of marketing is not doing any favors.
No, yeah, and Ouija at the time opened at $20 million shy, and we will not see those figures anymore. And if we take those latest horror movie that have been released here in the US, such as Imaginary that opened at $10 million, finishes run around 28, The First Omen, $8 million, 19 million cum, Abigail, 10 million opening and 19 million cum. Regarding our international tracking, and it looked like it's going to be around, yeah, the First Omen, Tarot, and Imaginary. Definitely, yeah. Definitely lower than Ouija. There is absolutely no doubt about that, sadly. And regarding age demographic, this is also my concern here. There is a big, big concentration among the youngest one. There is absolutely, well, the youngest one, meaning between 18 and 24, represents more than 84% of the demographic of the trainer. It's absolutely huge. This concentration is huge. And we know that bringing the younger audience in theater is very challenging. This is my concern regarding this movie. And also it's been, now it's quite popular to talk about AI at all, but 5 years ago, we started to train some model based on random forest and neuronal network. I'm not going into too much details here, but yeah, this AI model says to us that it's gonna land around 7 and 12, and my personal opinion is probably going to be a little bit lower than the comps I just quote. So yeah, around 6, 7 to me.
Really? That's even lower than the low end that we have here. But it's interesting that you mentioned this AI technology that you helped institute over in the French side of our company that we're slowly introducing here domestically on a case-by-case basis. The fact that our AI system is suggesting 7 to 12, our analyst council suggesting an opening between 7 to 10, and you see that recent performance of titles like you mentioned, Abigail at 10 million, something like First Omen at 8 million. It's all within this range. Horror has performed decently well, but there's been no big crossovers in the horror genre so far into 2024. We don't expect this one to be the one that breaks that trend. Let's go to what very well could be the number two movie of the weekend in its first holdover here. Week two of Challengers. The Zendaya sexy tennis movie is trending positively. Last weekend, we started the week on the forecast saying that it could open between 10 to 15. It kept on inching upwards. I think by the time we published our article, we said it could go as high as 20, but it actually hit that 15 million mark as we really thought it would at the beginning of the week. Here in week two, we think it might hold between 6 and 9 million, give or take. Like we said, we could really see this sneaking ahead of Tarot. From that opening weekend performance, Rebecca, what can we bring in from this movie's demographics?
Yeah, it was definitely popular among younger audiences. 41% of the people who saw the movie opening weekend were between 18 and 24. 76%, so over three quarters, were under 35, and 58% were women. So an interesting statistic that we have as well is that this was a popular group movie among young women, showing up at movie day in pairs or in groups, definitely leaning into the millennial and younger female audiences.
And we've got Chad Kennick here helping us out on the production of this episode. Chad, you saw this a couple months back. What did you think of Challengers?
Yeah, Italian director Luca Guadagnino, his work, he's known for his lush visuals, complex relationships, and sexy but not gratuitous storylines, and that's very much what Challengers is. It hits all of those boxes.
Oh, that's good to hear, and I think that's why we're seeing positive results here from Challengers. Well, Romeo, thank you so much for those insights, and that does it for this weekend's Box Office Pro Weekend Forecast. We will have Romeo back in the coming weeks to go over more movies coming up in those weekends. But now let's move on to our feature segment here after the break, our May movie preview with Russ Fisher. And we're back here for our feature segment on the Box Office Podcast with Russ Fisher, the editorial director of the Box Office Studios, a division of our company that produces editorial content targeting movie fans for movie theaters. Now, Russ, you're looking at the entire theatrical release slate and finding ways for moviegoers to engage with these movies coming to theaters. So we're going to put a lot of these questions on your plate, starting with The Fall Guy. Now, we just heard from Romeo on some of that movie's tracking, a little bit slower on the female demo. We have the comp with Bullet Train. That's coming out on May 3rd. How do you feel about this movie ahead of its opening weekend?
You know, personally, I can't wait to see The Fall Guy. You know, I guess I shouldn't say it's surprising to me that it's tracking relatively low and that women aren't connecting to it necessarily. It's like, it looks like it has all of the ingredients for this four quadrant thing that we don't see very often. You know, it's got a romance. It looks funny. The action looks good. We know Ryan Gosling is good in these kind of roles. We know Emily Blunt is great in this kind of role. Like, what more do you want? You know, like, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. But everything I see from it makes me very much want to see it. But it looks great. I would suggest that audiences go. I would try to drive audiences to this movie just because it looks like the sort of movie we don't see very. It's that, like, kind of old fashioned in a way. Like, it just gives you a little bit of everything. And we don't see a lot of those. That's nice.
I don't know if I'd say it's tracking relatively on the lower side. I think the comp here that makes sense is Bullet Train, right? It's based on an IP, but it's not a popular IP. You've got a major star attached, you know, Ryan Gosling in this case, and Bullet Train's case, it was Brad Pitt. Bullet Train opened to 30. This was between 30 and 40. So really the lower end of our projections is to perform on par with Bullet Train. I think we just have to adjust our expectations on how high this could go, which is just a decent improvement over what Bullet Train did in late summer. When was it? 2022 or whenever it came out. And now we've got Taro. You've heard the concerns from Romeo's side on this title. Russ, Rebecca, Chad, you're all horror nerds in your own special ways. Are any one of you excited for this movie?
Hey, here's a better question. Do you know what the original title of this movie was?
Oh, no, no clue.
Do you know what this movie was called until like 3 months ago?
There was a different title 3 months ago. No, yeah. Shoot it. Come on.
Horrorscope.
Oh, that's much better. What did you do? Why do you change that title?
It's based on like a 90s YA kind of Goosebumps-ish horror book written, like published by a house that I think uses the same pseudonym for different authors. So like the published author for the book Horrorscope is a pseudonym. It's a pen name used by, I don't remember who the real author is. But anyway, it's a book that's been out there for a while. So if you liked YA leaning horror in the 90s before anybody knew what YA was, you know, and you read a book called Horrorscope, well, go see Tarot, because that's what this movie is based on.
None of that was communicated in the paltry marketing that very few of us saw.
You know, while you guys were talking about tracking, one thing that came to mind for me was the relatively good performance, I think also from Sony and Screen Gems, of the Escape Room movies. And that's kind of what this looks like to me. You know, it looks like this was greenlit by the same people who are like, hey, we need another escape room movie. But there's nothing that I've seen from I don't know, like the trailer's not bad. It looks like a perfectly decent, you know, you're in high school, go see a movie with your friends. But wait, that's not what people do now. So
but who knows? I mean, I feel like Happy Death Day also kind of fit into that same.
Sure.
Mold. Yeah. Just skewing a little bit more adult, and that one, you know, panned out box office wise.
Yeah, totally. Happy Death Day, super fun movie. I think that's the question. Is Tarot fun? Like, is it that sort of entertaining, popcorny, fun, a little scary kind of horror movie, or is it just a little blah? I don't have an answer for that question.
Well, let's find out if audiences turn out over the weekend, because we've got another title coming in here on the re-release side. I have to ask you guys if you remember seeing this movie on its original run, because I have it so clearly etched in my memory. Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace is enjoying its theatrical re-release on May 3rd. AMC is putting out a special edition R2-D2 popcorn bucket for this re-release. I think that's going to help it do fan business. That's good fan service ahead of the May 4th Star Wars holiday. I remember buying my tickets well in advance for opening day at the Regal Falls UA-12 in Miami, Florida, going out with a good friend of mine from high school. It must have been even like 9th grade, 8th grade. That's how old we were. And I was so excited. And coming out of it, I was still excited. But it's one of those feelings that as you're walking out of it, you get like a little bit less excited by the hour.
I was like,
after you realize what you just sat through.
I was anticipating it so much that I was in denial, and I think it probably took me an entire year to like really come to terms with it with myself that it's garbage.
I think the same. I think I really wanted to like it like for a year after seeing it, but every day that passed, I came to terms that this movie sucks. That by the time that episode 2 came out, Star Wars lost me as a fan. They had me from like age 6 through episode 1, but every day that passed after watching episode 1 was one day I liked episode 1 and Star Wars as a whole less. That I was out by episode 2. Chad, do you remember seeing this in its theatrical release?
Yes, it was my 12th birthday weekend.
Oh, so perfect.
I was just the right age and was really excited to see it. I think at that point, it didn't really matter if it was good or bad or anywhere in between. I was just such a big Star Wars kid that I was there. And for years, I like had my ticket.
Oh, me too. I still have that ticket stub because it felt like a cultural event.
I had the the little clip-in like rat's tail, you know, like the Jedi Padawans
Rodrigo Palacio, famous Inter Milan striker, sported that look for a while. Yeah. No good. Not even on him. Russ, do you remember like the impact that this movie had?
Oh yeah,
when it was released in theaters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, put it this way. I didn't wait in line for tickets. I didn't get early tickets. So, I mean, I was very ready to see this movie. I did not see it probably until it had probably been out for a few days before I got to see it. I did go see The Mummy because we were like, let's just go try to get into Star Wars. So I was part of that crowd that helped make The Mummy also recently
released in theaters. A more deserving film.
A better movie by any metric.
Yeah.
So saw The Mummy because we couldn't get Star Wars tickets. We couldn't get episode 1 tickets. Saw it a few days later, like you guys. And I mean, I was older when I saw it than you guys were when you did. And I must reluctantly admit that I was also in denial. I saw this movie in theaters multiple times because I was just like, I gotta try. I wanna like this.
That's how bad you wanted to like it. I love it.
And also ultimately had to admit that it sucks. I do want to point something out that to me is just, so this is the 25th anniversary re-release of The Phantom Menace. Leading up to The Phantom Menace was the theatrical re-releases of the original trilogy, the special editions, which began in 1997. And all I'm saying now is that this 25th anniversary re-release of Phantom Menace, we're farther away from Phantom Menace now than Phantom Menace was from Star Wars when that originally came out.
Wow.
I feel very old. That's
crazy. I did not even factor that in.
I feel very old.
I remember seeing that re-release. It seemed like Star Wars was just this classic movie from the vault that came out back in theaters when I saw it in 97, but you're absolutely right. Well, that's coming out on May 3rd. And listen, it's a movie that I think none of us look back fondly on, but for those younger audiences that never got to see it in a theater, this is going to be their first chance to go back and make up their own minds on Jar Jar Binks, which shouldn't be that difficult at any age. Let's go to the May 10th release of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. The franchise that does just well enough to produce more sequels that nobody really asks for. Chad, where do you fall on the new Planet of the Apes series?
Well, we saw 10 minutes or so at CinemaCon.
A good chunk.
And I feel like maybe it's because it was on such a massive screen, but where the technology is now, you know, film acting is all about the eyes. Mm-hmm. And where they've gotten the eyes on the apes, I was seeing that, I was all in. I was a little like on the fence before, but after that, I'm like, I'm ready to see this movie.
And that leads us into a busy May 17th here with three titles hitting different stages of wide release. There is the Amy Winehouse biopic Back to Black coming out from Focus Features. Overseas traction so far, so good. Solid results from the UK, markets like Italy. I mean, those Amy Winehouse fans are turning out in decent numbers, are tracking for this one, edging slightly upwards on a week by week basis.
Yeah, this is one where it's after 61 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and I know that's not, you know, simplifies things very much, but citing it because it is a metric that potential moviegoers do check. It's at 38% with a little over 60 reviews. So I'm thinking this might be one of those split. Critics don't like it, but the audiences show out situations, which if it makes money for movie theaters, it's fine. I don't have to see it, you know.
How about you, Chad? Are you going to be in the bag for Back to Black?
I missed that acclaimed 2015 documentary, Amy, so I don't know too much about her story. So I'm interested to go in and...
I think same here, but for me, that's working on the other side of the thing.
I want to watch
yeah. documentary more than I want to watch this film with a 38% consensus rating on a review aggregator. The critically acclaimed documentary seems a lot more interesting on my end. But listen, we're tracking this one upwards. This is a Focus Features release. We don't know how wide that screen count's going to be, but like everything coming out on the Universal side of specialty, you've got a 3-week PVOD ticking time clock. So opening weekend is relevant here, and there's really not much time for word of mouth to help it hit bigger heights. So let's move on here. Different genre, same weekend. Lionsgate coming out with The Strangers Chapter 1. There were two Strangers movies. I believe Universal put those out. Home invasion films. Now there is a trilogy of prequels all helmed by Rennie Harlan. The first chapter coming up in mid-May. Guys, it's hard for me to approach a home invasion movie after watching Michael Haneke's Funny Games. I think that sort of like ruins the entire section. It ruins a lot of cinema, actually. But it ruins my willingness to sit through anything like this. Any fans here of The Strangers?
Those are effective movies, The Strangers movies. They work really well. And I think people are kind of confused about what this one is, though, explicitly.
Because like chapter one, it's like part of the CinemaCon presentation. Wasn't there something to the effect of, oh, we're going to find out some backstory to who? I mean, the whole point is that they're just people in weird masks and one dude in a burlap sack. And they kind of just, you know, invade people's homes. And you know, there's no real reason to it. And that is ostensibly why it's so frightening. So I don't know if like it feels almost like a franchise. It's not supposed to have a mythology. Like it feels like it would be a hard one to nail.
Yeah,
totally.
I think they're pitching these three as sort of an origin story background.
Yeah, and to my knowledge, all three of these are filmed. I think they filmed them back to back, like starting just after COVID lockdown.
Like over a weekend or what? Because that's really what it seems like here. Why would you want to have all of this? Like, I just think, like Rebecca says, in horror, if you don't find, you don't need to have an origin story for evil.
Yes.
Sometimes not knowing what the family was up to in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre before you randomly run into them is a lot more effective than finding out that, hey, Leatherface had feelings as a child. I really don't care about that backstory sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Are you saying, Daniel, that you didn't go see Ouija Origin of Evil?
Because that was a mistake on your end if you didn't see it.
I am saying that. I am an apologist, as people that listen to this podcast know, of the Rob Zombie Halloween movies, but mostly because the second half of Rob Zombie's Halloween just gives you everything you asked for in watching a remake of Halloween, which is a remake of the third act.
Right.
The first half of Rob Zombie's Halloween is a half that I could completely do without. I don't care. I don't care. You don't need to explain it.
Right.
And I think having three movies of the first half of Rob Zombie's Halloween here with, you know, going into three chapters of backstory. For me, I like my horror without explaining it. We've got If, which is, in Russ Fisher's words from an early episode of this podcast, the equivalent of a live action Pixar movie. I think that's the easiest way to describe this title, from actor, now director, John Krasinski. He goes from giving us a horror title in A Quiet Place to a family film in If. They gave out t-shirts. Did you guys pick this up, Rebecca, Chad, at CinemaCon? The If t-shirts after the CinemaCon presentation from Paramount?
I gave my someone, so, our friend, I forget the name of the theater up in Lake Placid. She wanted one for her mom, so I gladly
You gave it away. I was wearing it to sleep. My daughter, who's almost a year old, every time she sees like the If monster, she like points at my shirt and then makes eye contact with me and smiles. Oh. So it passes the adorable test.
That's a good sign.
A big heads up to the team of If in that monster design. Listen, this can go either way. Star-studded, I think, a really cool concept, but there's not a proven IP here. Dude, I don't know how this is going to work out in the marketplace. That's for our forecasting council to figure out. As moviegoers, I'm curious. My baby thinks it's cute. I'm going to watch it eventually.
I mean, Ryan Reynolds, he's in everything, and when it works, it works. So,
Who knows? Chad, on your end, what are you thinking about here with If?
I'm interested. I want to see it. I think what we saw a little more, I feel like, in what they showed at CinemaCon. I'm down to check it out.
I'm rooting for this movie, though. I am. I think it's a movie made with the right intentions, a theatrical event. Stars, family driven,
original
concept. Yeah, I really want it to succeed, but it is an uphill battle. And I think our forecasting is going to reflect some of that challenge. I think we're all rooting for this to succeed. And then on the IP side, but we haven't seen too much marketing on here, our forecasting for the Garfield movie was originally much higher heading into this year, but we haven't seen much in the way of marketing. We originally thought this could be maybe not a Super Mario Brothers-like performance, but definitely a marquee performance. But there really hasn't been a footprint here to lead us to think it's going to have a huge impact. Coming out May 24th, Garfield is always going to be a draw, but people need to know it's coming out, and they need to know soon because it's coming out at the end of the month against the Mad Max movie.
Chad, you interviewed the director. I don't know if they let you see any footage because I imagine not in the run-up to CinemaCon, but what was your impression?
Our deadline was so early, I didn't get to see anything, but I had a great conversation with the director, Mark Dindal. He has a rich background in animation, and they're doing a lot of social media stuff for this film. Like, I just was seeing an ad for The Fall Guy with Garfield, so they're trying to play off some of the stuff coming out.
That gets a chuckle out of me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cat that likes lasagna. Why not? Russ, lasagna cat, you into this?
I'm like, can I tell you what a huge Garfield fan I was when I was like 8? And this was, I think, at the height of Garfield's early to mid 80s popularity. You know, I don't know if you weren't there at the time, it's maybe difficult to get across how literally huge Garfield was as a like comic strip figure. And there wasn't really, even before there was an animated series or anything like that, just as a newspaper strip, it was huge. It was a big, big deal.
People hate Mondays and like Italian food. He's relatable.
It's so relatable. So relatable. Odie's an idiot.
Doesn't like Mondays, right?
John's an idiot.
Normal.
Yeah.
Oh, this is, yeah, I feel like, was this even pre-Normal? I don't know when Normal was introduced. But anyway, as a child, I was a giant Garfield fan. Have never seen any of the movies, so that tells
you. Right. They did. There were Bill Murray movies.
Yeah, there you one go. With a subtitle of A Tale of Two Kitties.
Yes,
That's fun. Yeah, that came out. Bill Murray was in them. Now Chris Pratt's doing the Garfield thing. So unlike If, the Garfield movie is a proven IP. We'll have to see just how much it connects in that pre-release marketing campaign ahead of that May 24th release date. Because coming out at the end of the month, probably my most anticipated movie of the year, and the theme of my child's first birthday party, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. I am so excited. I can't wait for this. And not only that, I've already started rewatching all of the Mad Max movies because Russ and I are going to do one of those box office preview episodes on this podcast before this gets released. Picked up Kyle Buchanan's book on the making, the oral history on the making of Fury Road.
Yeah.
It's one of those series where the making of these movies is probably just as interesting as the movies themselves.
Which, cheers to Chris Hemsworth and Anya Taylor-Joy for signing up, probably knowing what they were getting into.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited. I hope this is good, but I hoped fervently that Fury Road would be good, and it was better than that. So if this is even pretty good, I'll be happy.
Chad, where do you fall with a Fury Road renaissance on the Mad Max franchise?
Yeah, when Fury Road came out, I went in completely blind, not knowing anything about what I was going to see, and was blown away. So to have this come back, I'm excited. I'm ready to see it.
I can't wait. Like you, I didn't know too much about Fury Road. I actually wasn't a huge fan of the Mad Max movies. It was my first time seeing anything in a Dolby Cinema auditorium. I remember I saw this at the AMC 42nd Street Dolby Cinema Auditorium shortly after it opened, if I'm not mistaken. And man, to this day, probably my favorite experience of seeing a studio film at the theaters. But we'll be going into a lot more detail on the experience of watching these Mad Max movies in our preview episode coming up at the end of the month, going over the box office history of the Mad Max saga. Well, Russ Fischer, Chad Kenrick, and Rebecca Pauly, thank you so much for your insights on that May preview. There is a diverse slate of films heading to a theater near you nationwide this month. Guys, thank you so much for participating. And to our audience, thank you so much for listening. The Box Office Podcast is produced by Record Edit Podcast and The Box Office Company. New episodes come out every Thursday, so don't forget to subscribe, and we will talk to you again next week.